Hey, I'm Darren, and I'm one of the pastors here at Focus 314. And today, we are in week two of a series that we are calling, What Would Jesus Undo? Back in the 90s, there was a movement that was going around based on a book that was written almost 100 years before that called, What Would Jesus Do? And there were these bracelets that people would wear called WWJD. Some of you remember what that was. Some of you even wore those bracelets. And what it was a great thing to be able to find yourself into any kind of situation and ask yourself the question, what would Jesus do? And so we were thinking about that and we thought, well, what if we took a little bit of a different spin on it and we asked the question, what would Jesus undo? What are some of the things that break his heart? What are some of those things that we look at and we could say, you know what? Jesus would say, we should undo this. Last week was powerful. It was a powerful week where we talked about the area of spiritual indifference. What would Jesus undo? He would undo this spirit of meh. You take it or leave it. I don't know about you, but my wife really took advantage of that this past week. And so anytime I would ask her a question, she would just say meh. And I'm like, oh, we got jokes up in the house right now. I love it so much. It just makes me feel good that she was actually paying attention to the message, all right? Like, I know I got one last week, at least that's what it was. But what would Jesus undo? We learned that it breaks his heart when we just respond to the gift that he has given us with just this attitude. Not only does it break his heart, we saw that it turns his stomach. And so that's what we're talking about is going through this idea of what would Jesus undo. And so to kind of set up today's message, let me ask you a question. Has anybody in here ever had somebody say anything like incredibly nice to you?
I
feel like I need to encourage you today because you're like, nobody ever. People tear me down all the time. Like, no. Like, anybody ever had anybody say anything nice to you before, right? Yeah, like, that make you feel good? Like, it builds you up, right? How about this one? Has anybody ever had somebody say something incredibly nice to you, but you felt like there were some ulterior motives to it? Why do I see more hands with that one? It was mostly moms, too. They were like, immediately, mom, you're the greatest mom in the entire world. What do you want? You know, like, you sense it, right? Like, how about this one? Has anybody had anybody say something incredibly nice to you, but you realize that they were just saying what you thought you wanted to hear? Anybody had that one before? Back last summer, Pastor Jonathan and I, we had an opportunity to go down to Tucson and have this kind of pastor's gathering. Why I was in Tucson, y'all, I love Phoenix. I'm just going to say that, okay? You know, like, but we went down to Tucson, and we were there for this pastor's gathering and getting introduced to some people that we had heard of but necessarily didn't know. And I met this one guy, and he said, he was like, oh, hey, man, Pastor Darren, I've heard of what God is doing through Focus 314 and just so glad to be able to meet you and excited. And we should stay in contact. Let's exchange numbers and let's stay in contact with each other. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. That'd be fantastic. And we love connecting with people. And we have great friends with pastors all across the country. And so immediately I followed up with him and I sent him a text. Hey, great to connect. Look forward to what God has for us in the future. And nothing. Like, no response or anything like that. Like, not even like a new phone. Who dis? Like, nothing. Like, I got nothing, you know? And I was like, okay, you know, like, that's no big deal. Maybe I got the wrong number or something, you know. Maybe he gave me Domino's number. I don't know, you know. But then again, my wife and I were later on at the end of the summer, we were at another gathering in Southern California, and wouldn't you know, I saw the same guy there again. So, you know, trying to think the best of somebody, I don't want to think the worst of them. I went up to him again, and I was like, hey, it's so good to see you. And again, immediately, oh, yes, it's so great to connect. We need to stay in touch. And so I said, well, you know, actually, I saw you, you know, just a couple of months ago. And And I texted you back, and you know, maybe I got the wrong number. And he was like, oh yeah, well maybe that's the case. And so I was like, well, let me check. And so I texted him again, and then he's holding out his phone enough for me to be able to see what's happening on his phone. And sure enough, that previous text popped up. You got busted, man. That's exactly what it was. You were just saying something to me because you felt like that's what I wanted to hear, but truly they were just empty words with an empty sentiment. And I wonder sometimes how God responds to us when we are in a moment of worship and thanking him, but we don't truly mean it at all. And they're just empty words with empty sentiment. And what we're talking about today is, what would Jesus undo? I believe that he would undo empty worship. He would get rid of us saying empty words when they don't mean anything at all. They will break the heart of Jesus. Check this out in Matthew chapter 15. Jesus is getting ready to have this amazing conversation. It's a powerful conversation. He said, then some Pharisees, which, if you're not familiar, Pharisees were religious leaders at the time when Jesus was walking this earth. And these religious leaders came up to him and said, some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem, and they asked this question. Hey, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat. Great question, right? In fact, I don't know about you, but I think that's a good rule to go by, right? Like, you need to go wash your hands. We tell that to our boys all the time because they're boys and they're disgusting and filthy, right? Like, go wash your hands before you eat. But what they're talking about here has nothing to do with physical hygiene, which I'm all on board with that. Like, my wife will tell you that me and a mess do not get along at all. Like, I do not care for messes, undo messes, I should really say. Because, there's times when it's appropriate, you know? Like, if you're working on a car, you're doing yard work, you're out on a hike, mountain biking, or something like that, like, you expect to get dirty in that moment. But if I'm just sitting in my house doing nothing, I don't expect to have soda spilled all over me. You understand what I'm saying, right? Like, but my wife is so great because usually she cleans up the mess before I get too stressed out about it. But if we were just talking about physical hygiene, but it's not. This doesn't have to do with physical hygiene in this moment. What they're talking about is this thing called ceremonial cleansing. Ceremonial cleanliness was something that devout Jews at that time held onto very, very deeply. And you had to be ceremonial clean to really be able to present an offering before God. And we see that kind of take place in the Old Testament, that God would give some of these rules and to follow, but they began to take these and just go wild with all of these rules. They just go wild with all of these different things. And so devout Jews at that time really, really bought into this ceremonial cleanliness thing. At the time, there was a category for all things. Either it was clean or it was unclean. And that's how they would look at anything. Something that was clean was worthy, and you could be able to worship God in that moment. If you were unclean, you had to figure it out and get back to being in a place that you were clean. They categorized everything in this manner. Worship was clean or unclean. Animals were clean or unclean. Objects were clean or unclean. All of these different things could make you unclean, and you had to get to a place where you could be clean again. And that's exactly what they're talking about. See, the ceremonial cleanliness thing and being unclean, it was very contagious. It was like cooties. That's what it was. It was, y'all know what I'm talking about with cooties, right? Like, because everybody in here has gone through at least fourth grade before, right? You know, you remember what cooties were. And cooties, like, you didn't want to have those. But this was worse than cooties, because if you were unclean and you touched something that was unclean, like if I'm unclean myself and then I touched a cup, then that cup is automatically unclean. And then if my wife came around and she picked up that cup, then that automatically made her unclean as well. And then if she went someplace else and touched something, then you could see how quickly the cooties were spreading around, right? And so it was very important to make sure that you were ceremonial clean. And to do that before you would eat was important to them. And so there was already an assumption that you were unclean because, like, man, these cooties are spreading so quickly and so devastatingly that you had to make sure before you ate every single meal that you would get yourself to a place where you were clean again. And so what they would do, there was this kind of elaborate deal that they would go through. So to get yourself ceremonial clean before you could participate in eating any meal, they would hold their hands out like this. And they had to have their hands out and pointed down. And they would have their hands out and pointed down, and then somebody else would come with what they called a quarter of a log of water. How much is a quarter of a log of water? Well, I'm glad that you asked. A quarter of a log of water, it's so weird, man. It's an eggshell and a half of water. I don't know what size eggshell it is. I'm going to assume that they were the AAA ones, all right? Like, but it was an eggshell and a half of water, which is what it would take to make sure that you could get your hands ceremonial clean. And the reason why they would hold them out and then they would hold them down is this, is if the person would pour the water on their hands, they would rub their hands clean, and then they would have to make sure that the water would drip down onto the ground. Because here's what would happen, is that as the water was getting poured onto your hands, which were unclean, that you had to make sure that it dripped off of you, because now the water is unclean. And so if the water that was unclean would begin to drip down your arm, well, now you're unclean again, and then you got to go through the entire process all over again. So you had to make sure that it was just sitting out, pointed down, and air dried possible, and then that's what would make you clean. Now, devout Jews at that time, they would do this before every single meal. And somebody who was really strong in their faith wouldn't do this just before every single meal. They would do this before every single course. So they go through and do a ceremonial cleansing before the tater tots. Then they do a ceremonial cleansing before the hamburger. And then they got to do a ceremonial cleansing before the milkshake, all right? So they would do that every single time. And they were religious in this. And so they asked the question, well, how come we don't see you doing this? How come we don't see your disciples doing this thing? And you see Jesus responds. He is so blunt. And you can almost kind of, you can begin to sense the fire inside of him. And you can begin to sense the emotion that he's getting ready to have and the response to these people at the time. And we see him pick it up. And Jesus replied, and why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father and mother is to be put to death. Continue on. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, and they were using religion to be able to take away from the resources that could show love to their father and their mother. And there was greed inside of their hearts. And Jesus is saying, are you kidding me with this? You're coming to me with this tradition. You're coming to me with these rules and these regulations. But you can't even do a simple thing of love the people that are close to you. And thus nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites. There's a fire inside of Jesus. There's something inside of him that is stirring. There's something inside of him that it's breaking his heart. And he continues on. He said, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me, and they worship me in vain. In other words, they're completely empty words that they're saying. And it is empty worship that each and every single one of you are bringing around. What breaks the heart of God, and what would Jesus undo? He would undo empty worship. He would undo empty words that we say. It doesn't matter what we say if what's inside of our heart is just full of darkness. What would Jesus undo? He would undo empty worship. Their teachings are just merely human rules. We're talking about worship today. And most of the time when we think about worship, we usually think about the music, right? So let's just talk about that. If that's what we think about, then let's just talk about that for a little while. If we think that empty worship breaks the heart of God, then then let's talk about what that looks like. We don't want to break the heart of God with our worship. So let's just, so here's the question. So what's the right type of worship? Like, I don't know about you, but, you know, I've been to a lot of different churches and experienced a lot of different types of worship. Anybody experienced lots of different types of worship? You know, like, especially if you've grown up in church, there's a lot of different types of worship. You know, there's something that's a little bit more traditional, right? A little, something that's a little bit more reverent. It's a little bit quieter. Or there's some that are a little bit louder, right? Like there's some that like a little bit more exuberant, more charismatic in their approach, which is the right type. You know, is it having a band? Is the band the right type of thing? Or is it like just singing a cappella? What's the right type of worship? And let's talk about like those two kind of extreme ones, I guess we could say. Is it traditional worship, or is it more like charismatic, passion-filled worship? Which one is the right one? Well, I can tell you that right now I'm going to answer all of those questions, and I'm going to settle all those different philosophies that you've had and worship wars that are going on. I've got the answer for you right now. What's the right type of worship? Is it traditional? Or is it more charismatic? Guess what? They both are. When your heart is right with God. And guess what? Neither one of them are. When your heart is far from God. True worship that touches the heart of God is not about any style of worship. True worship that touches the heart of God is not about the style of worship. Worship is a reflection of the condition of your heart. I gotta say that again. Worship is a reflection of the condition of your heart. What's going on inside of your heart? Think about it this way. This would never happen. This wouldn't take place, but maybe it'll help illustrate this a little bit. Let's say I've got two boys, and let's say that one day they decided that they wanted to be able to write a song of praise of how great their dad was. Like I said, it's never going to happen, all right? Like I know that's not going to happen. But let's say that they just do. Let's say that they write a song and they're like, Dad, we wrote this song because we love you so much and we're so thankful for all of the amazing things that you have done for us and you continue to do for us. And so we wrote you this song. And then immediately they begin to sing this a cappella song because neither one of them know how to be able to play an instrument. They begin to sing this song for me about how great that I am. And do you think for one moment that I would sit there and stop them and say, whoa, 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 I don't care for that style of song to me. If you want to be able to sing the right kind of song to me, you need to be able to go get some music. You need to be able to go get some instruments. And I would prefer to be able to have a little bit of a light show and get some fog in there. And really, you need to set the mood right for you to be able to sing a great song to me. Get it right, boys. You think that would happen? Or what if they came in and, again, they don't have instruments, so that they get a spoon and a pot and pan, and they're like, come on, Dad, we got this song that we're going to sing. And then you just start banging away on this, and they're singing with everything that they have. They got smiles on their faces, and I'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That is way too loud. I do not care for that. You need to treat me with some respect. You need to be a little more reverent around me. That's just ridiculous, isn't it? Like, that doesn't make sense at all. Instead, what I see is I see two boys that I love tremendously offering up praise and just a tremendous heart of gratitude. What's the right kind of worship? The right kind of worship is what happens inside of your heart. It has nothing to do with style. It has nothing to do with volume. It has everything to do with what's going on inside of our heart. What breaks the heart of Jesus? Empty words and empty worship. What does Jesus love? An overflow of the heart. An overflow of what's happening inside of you. So then the question that really we get down to then is like, okay, well, if that's what's going on inside of my heart and I want to have my heart right with God, well then, well, how? Like, so how should we worship? How, what does that look like for us? And really you can see a tremendous way that people respond to God through worship in Scripture. There's so many different ways, and we're going to look at a couple of them this morning. The first thing that we're going to look at, how do we worship? Number one is this, we sing before Him. We sing, you know. I don't know about you, but singing in music is such an emotional response, isn't it? There's emotion that goes along with music, and God wants us to be able to respond in an emotional way, that there's we're going to sing before God. Psalms 96, 1 through 4 says, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord. Praise His name. Proclaim His salvation day after day. That every day I'm singing a song of praise of what He has done inside of my life. And then I love this. Declare His glory among the nations. The thing I love about that is, like, I want to be able to sing so loud that the nations hear me. I want to be able to sing with everything that I have. Well, how do you respond in worship to God? We sing before Him. Jenny and I, we have some former students of ours at another church that we were at. We have some former students that are actually trying out on American Idol this year. I didn't even know the show was still on. Just to be honest with you, I didn't realize it was still on. But we saw that. It was like, oh, okay. So right now they're in the, you guys remember the, like, the tryout thing, you know, like, you got your ticket to Hollywood. Anybody remember that? Come on, y'all. You've all seen it once, at least one time. I know you have. You're like, oh no, I've never watched American Idol in my life. Yeah, right. Okay. But so they're in that little phase right now. So Jenny and I are watching. We're watching a lot of those because we don't know which episode they're on. They do that on purpose. They're sucking us in. We're invested in these people. Oh, I hope that person wins again. We're going to end up watching the entire season. I know it. It's going to happen. So we're watching this thing, and over again, you hear the judges say this statement. We just need you to be able to feel the music. We need you to be able, you need to sing it from your heart. Like, sure, you have all the talent, you have the vocal range, and you're not pitchy, you know, like, you sound great, but there's no connection that you have with the song. When we're singing a song of praise to the Lord, that's an emotional response of what's happening where? In our heart, on the inside. How do you respond to Jesus? How do you respond in worship? You sing before Him. You sing before Him. Another way that we can respond in worship is this, is that we bow before Him. There are times that we become so overwhelmed with what God has done inside of our lives that we just can't do it. We can't even stand anymore. And just in this reverent awe, God, I'm so thankful for what You have done for me. I'm so overwhelmed that I'm kneeling and I'm bowing before Him. And these are my kneeling and my bowing jeans, people. Come on now. You're so overwhelmed that's what happens. Check this out in Psalms 95. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. I don't know about you, but I serve a great and a wonderful God who has done great and wonderful things in my life. And there are some moments that I'm so overwhelmed that I can't even stand in His presence. And I fall down on my knees. I fall down and I'm just so thankful. And let me tell you something right now. If you are a follower of Jesus, or even if you are not, there are moments in your life that you feel that weight. You feel that overwhelming sense. And you have a choice. The choice is you're going to either kneel now or you're going to kneel at some point. Because I'm going to tell you, Philippians 2:10 says that at some point, every knee will bow. Every single one of us are going to come a point when the glory of God comes down, and it might be of the other side of eternity, but every single person is going to respond in a way that they do what? They kneel before Him. That they bow down before Him. It is appropriate for us to kneel down. Feel welcome in this environment, that when there are songs of praise being sung to the Lord Jesus, that you are so overwhelmed that you just kneel right down in front of you. Getting back up might be a little bit different story for some of us, right? You won't give me a hand, I was overwhelmed, all right? But we are there for you. We will lift each other up. Come on, somebody. What's an appropriate way for us to respond in worship to God? That sometimes we sing before Him with a joyful noise. Some of it's more joyful to others, right? Like, but we will do it with everything that we have. And there are moments that we are overwhelmed and we will bow down before Him. How do we respond to Jesus in worship? We will lift our hands before Him. We will lift our hands before Him. Let me help you with something right now. This is not a pastor thing. This is not a holy roller thing. This is a Bible thing. This is a Bible thing to be able to lift holy hands before God. 1 Timothy 2:8. They went, therefore, I want the men everywhere to do what? Pray and lift up holy hands. Man, I'm going to tell you right now, there should be no way, and I dare you to make sure that nobody is out worshiping you. You need to be the leaders in this church. I want the men to lift up hands. We are the leaders. Take it. Why? Because that's what God instructs us to do. We will lift up holy hands in worship. Psalm 63:4. I will praise you as long as I live. And in your name, I will lift up my hands. Hey, think about this just within our culture today. What are the ways that we lift up our hands? There's three really big ways that I thought about really quickly. Number one is, stick them up. I'm pulling them up. You got to tell me twice, man. Like, I've seen too many YouTube videos anymore, man. It does not matter. I'm just putting my hands up, right? Like, that's it. Surrender. You lift your hands up in surrender. How about another one? You see children. Daddy. I just want my daddy. Comfort, security, safety, right? What's another one that we see in our culture today? Cheers. Victory! Yeah. We won, baby! Can you believe it? I could not believe that we won because the Patriots win all the time. It's ridiculous. Getting sick and tired of it. Amen. Victory! Man, you get excited. We won! Yeah! You go running around your house. You get so excited about what's taking place. And that's exactly what we do when we are worshiping God with holy hands. In surrender, God, I give everything to you. It's not on my own will. It is on your will. And I surrender to your authority. God, I'm in a hurting place right now. And I just need your comfort. I need your peace to be able to surround me. And I give everything to you right now. Just hold me, Father God. God, I'm so thankful for the victory that you have given me. I've gone through the valley. I've gone through those tough times. And I'm on the other side. And we raise our hands in victory. We will lift our hands before the Lord. How do we respond in worship? We will sing songs. We will bow down before Him. We will lift up holy hands. And sometimes you just got to get a little happy dance going on. Sometimes you just get so excited that you just, man, I just can't help. Well, that's not me. I'll just tap my feet. Man, you're moving your foot. That's dancing to me, right? Like, just tap your foot a little bit. You're just getting excited. Man, we do that, right? We get excited about these things. Just here, like, oh, I got my little new phone. I'm doing my little happy dance. I'm not doing that. In front of anybody. You do it at home, right? Don't slip in the shower when you're doing your little happy dance. We get a little excited sometimes. Men are like, no, I don't do that. Okay, how about when your team does win? Oh, man, I'm going to start high-fiving people all over the place. I don't even know you. Come on, give me a hug, man. Like, I'm chest bumping anybody that's around, you know? Like, I just crushed my little kid's chest bone because I just chest bumped him so much, you know? Like, you get excited. You do a little dance around. Check this out, Psalm 149:3. Let them praise His name with dancing. Get a little excited. You move a little bit. And then I love this, and make music with Him with the timbrel and the harp. hey, we got a little timbrel over here, and we got a six-string harp, all right, y'all? That's how we do things up in here. It's scriptural. That's all I'm saying. You get so excited that you just want to be able to dance before him. Even when you're going through difficult times. Psalm 30. You turned my wailing into dancing. You turned my mourning into dancing. You turned my difficulty into dancing. I was broken and hurting, and you turned it into. Come on, now I'm just excited for what God has done inside of me. I was in a broken place. I was in a hurting place, and there's nothing. I just can't. I just got to move. Some of you are like, keep that one to yourself, Pastor. And you see me respond that way. Why do you see me move around? Because I can't help it. Because I know what Jesus has done for me, and it just comes overwhelming to me. Feel free to be able to respond. Let me tell you something right now. This is what I believe with everything inside of me, is that we are a passionate church, and we love a loud church. You see the way the music is, the style, all of that kind of stuff. But I will say this, and I believe it with everything inside of me, that I believe that spiritually, this is the greatest place of growth that we can go as a church in our worship. And as a church, I mean me, the rest of our pastors, and all of us. I believe that this is the greatest place of spiritual growth that we have, to worship our King. And not just empty words, but what he's done inside of us. And to understand it. And there's nothing that we can do. I'm not holding back my song. I'm going to sing it out with everything that I have. I'm so overwhelmed at this moment that, God, I bow down before you. I'm so overwhelmed. God, I raise up my hands. That, man, you just hit that key change. Oh, come on, somebody. Like, it just gets excited because, God, I just love you so much. And I just want to be able to praise you with everything that I have. Even when we don't want to. Because I don't know about you, but there are moments when I am not overwhelmed to move in that direction. How do we respond in worship to God? We sing our songs, we bow, we lift our hands, we can dance, and I think that this is the most important thing, is that we offer a sacrifice of praise before him. Because there's moments I don't want to. I don't feel like it. Do you understand the situation that I'm in? And I'm gonna sing. I'm gonna move in that kind of. I'm hurting inside. Hebrews 13:15. Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that openly profess his name. Continually. Not just when you feel like it, but at all times. Because I'm going to tell you, sometimes the most powerful worship is the choice of worship. Sometimes the most powerful worship isn't when you are moved into it. It is when you make the choice. God, I'm in a tough place right now. I'm going to choose to worship you. I got to tell you something. Those are the moments that I love my wife more than anything else. When I know that I have said something or done something that have hurt her, but she chooses to love me back. Oh. God's not going to hurt you, but I know that there's situations in life that do. And when you make the choice to worship him, that is powerful. What do you think that does to the heart of God? I know my daughter is going through it's a horrible time right now. I can see all of these things that are taking place around here, and she's just getting attacked, but yet she's still singing songs of praise to me. I know that it's easy to get distracted. I know that it'd be so easy for you to be able to turn your back away, but yet you're singing to me. How do you think he wants to respond to you in that moment? And I see my son right here, and I know that even the mess that he's in, or some of the some of his own choices that he's done, and he's put himself into this situation. But yet, because he's in there right now, he's looking to me. He's singing his songs to me. He needs my help again. How do you think that God is going to respond to you in those moments? Church, why do you think I say when the praise goes up, the power comes down? Because you're responding to God. You're making the choice to worship him. Sometimes the most powerful worship that you can have is the choice of worship. It's the choice of worship. Check this out. John 4. Yet a time is coming and now has come when the true worshipers, what breaks the heart of God? Empty worship. So how do we want to respond? We want to be able to be true worshipers, right? Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. And they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. What breaks the heart of Jesus? Empty worship. Worship that is in vain. Man, you say the right things, but your heart is far from me. But there's going to be a time that there is going to be true worshipers. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. In spirit and in truth. That the words that you're saying are what? True words. They're not empty words. They are words that you mean with everything inside of you. So the question that we have is, how do we do that? How do we worship in spirit and in truth? Because if that breaks the heart of God, empty worship, then I don't want that to be me. I don't want to break the heart of Jesus. I don't want him to be able to see just worship that's in vain and empty words that are coming from me. How do we do this? This is really what it is. Worship, true worship, flows from the inside out. It starts inside of your heart. Guard your heart. For everything flows from it. Your worship to God flows from the inside out. From the inside out. Romans 12:1. He says, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, everybody here, I urge you. Everybody in here right now, I urge you. In view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is true and proper worship. Worship isn't just what we do. Worship is who we are. Worship is who we are.